London was cracking for New Year's.
Not bad. That was pretty good.
Let's hear an American.
Oh my gosh, London was cracking for New Year's. I had so much fun.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Beer Mile Podcast.
I'm quite pissed as well.
Could you imagine if we spent the next 90 minutes trying to do
what we did for Ryan Jen and Ryan? Jen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm quite pissed.
What did she say? I'm making a tit out of myself.
Welcome back, Beer Mile Nation.
It is dry January.
It is dry January, and that's why we are only drinking seltzer waters. Bud Light seltzer, cherry cordial.
I thought that was a Bud Light.
Bud Light seltzer, cherry cordial. We're just drinking water this month because it is dry January. So we're, you know.
So you're 6 days in?
It's only because Athletic Brewing did not deliver my beers in time.
Is that slander?
And that's only because I did not order the beers in time.
There you go.
So, you know.
What's your longest streak without having a beer or a drink?
So today marks 100 days sober, not consecutive.
just lifetime. In my life. Yeah.
No, I don't know. Longest streak sober, first 19 years of my life.
No shit. But I mean, like, as an adult, have you ever been like, I'm gonna spend 30
days. Definitely. I would say, especially when I was training for Chicago Marathon in 2019 or Indy Marathon 2019, that was multiple months.
Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. Without having a single beer. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. That's when I found Athletic Brewing for the first time. And while I will say, I mean, those, you know, Upside Dawn and Run Wild, they're two main ones. The IPA, those aren't my favorite beers from them, but that's when I first found those. And so it was enough to scratch my itch. Yes, I was about to say itch my scratch. scratch my itch for those couple of months.
It really pulled your socks up.
Pulled my socks up, strapped in my boots, or
Holly,
pulled up my bootstraps.
Holly, you'll have to know if, or let us know if we used that right.
Yes, please let us know. Holly Archer, our guest on, first of all, awesome name.
Holly Alexandra Archer. That's like a very, that sounds like she's British royalty. No, it's a good name though. It's a good name.
It is a good name. We get into it. No, this was an awesome episode because we get into everything that the people love. So number one, US versus UK, like what are the weird cultural things? Kind of like we talked about with Adele Tracy and Ben Coldray, you know, dozens of episodes ago.
Oh, I'm disappointed. Usually you know the exact episode for everything.
34?
Listeners, you got to check them.
Ooh, I'm going to go with 34. It's in
the
30s.
Final answer.
So we kind of revisit that. We talk about, she went to university. She went to college in the US. So we, you know, we talk some partying at college, some drinking games.
Everything's
all of that.
Bigger in Texas.
We talk her training at altitude, talk her signing Under Armour, dating Mark Scott and how that went.
I have a question for Chris. Was that your intention to bring that up?
No, I actually didn't know she was dating.
Neither did I. Scott, we pulled it off though.
We
pretended.
So Holly, hopefully you're re-listening to this, unless you're too like nervous or embarrassed to re-listen to this. But I actually did not know that you previously dated
Chris,
Mark Scott. I heard
Chris,
you in another podcast talk about observing Mark Scott's Bowerman training, and that was your realization that, oh, pros actually train really freaking hard. And so that was my intention of bringing up Mark Scott. I actually did not know that she used to date Mark Scott.
I didn't either. That was just
I didn't
a
scroll
fun...
back that far on Insta. And apparently
sometimes,
the photos are deleted. I don't
sometimes
know.
Sometimes you just got to lie and go with the conversation flow, and it turned out better for
it
that.
It turned out way better. I looked like I...
We weren't trying to be asses.
We weren't trying to be asses on that one.
Or arses.
I will say, it is way more fun to banter with... Look, praise to Josh Kerr. It's way more fun to banter with someone from the UK because they don't take themselves so seriously. And I think they're more open to just...
Making a tit.
Shooting the shit.
Making
as
a
we
tit
would say
out
here.
Of themselves.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
All of the British sayings, the phrases don't sound good in it, like in our English.
No, they only sound good because of the accent.
Yes.
And I know it's like sucks when we, because whenever I am just enthralled, whenever I hear someone with a British accent talk, I'm just like enthralled. I'm like, this person is at the same time the funniest person I've ever met and the smartest person I've ever met just because of their accent. Yeah. I love it.
I, my internal monologue is still in Holly's accent?
Oh, for it's ongoing.
Yeah,
because that's the latest one.
It'll probably stop when I go home tonight. Yeah.
Oh, I'm definitely like that. When I went to London, not London, I went to Lee this year. When I went to England in October, it was the same thing where, because I was only exposed to that for like 2 or 3 days, for like a day afterwards, I could just, that was how I thought in my head.
It's kind of trippy.
It's totally crazy. And I was like, man, I wish I could just adopt this accent.
Yeah, it's like really the setting. Nice. It's the setting on your phone that you can change your Siri voice. Like, can I change my internal monologue voice?
Yeah. Want to.
That'd be nice.
Wow, you're like a lot taller than me today, too.
Well, we got different chairs.
I mean, a little squatty potty or whatever.
Dude, long.
If you're watching the video version on Spotify, which you should be, and also on Spotify, you should be giving us a 5-star rating, because now Spotify has ratings.
Apparently, they give
it would really help others discover the show. It's a free way to support the show. But if you're on there, you will see that Adam has a bigger stool.
You know what they say about bigger stool?
Shorter or longer legs? Shorter legs?
Well, you're compromising for something.
Sure. Totally. Another shout out to...
Oh, we got some new Patreons.
We got some new patrons. So on top of supporting the show for freezies by just giving us a 5-star on Apple or Spotify, you can help support the show by coming to Patreon.
Get a lot of exclusive shit.
And again, I think we said this in the first episode. If you join us on Patreon... We are actually losing money to you in the first month.
Technically, yeah.
We are technically losing money to you because we send you something in the mail for everyone that signs up. And if you, depending on what tier you sign up for, if you sign up for the most expensive tier, we actually ship you a package. I have to walk like a mile to the post office. I have to ship you these things. So we owe it all to you. We really thank you. And we hope you enjoy all the uncut, uncensored, behind the scenes, exclusive.
Thanks. So far, we've
stupid
gotten,
stuff that we
so
put
far
up
we've
there.
Gotten a lot of good feedback.
Great feedback.
We are at some point in the near future going to be adding more Patreon benefits to the website.
Yes.
So only good things coming.
Patreon's only going to continue to grow.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Long Patreon. Also long squatty potties. I mean, shout out.
Yeah. Long. Have not got one yet because I usually don't have a problem shitting myself as a runner. But someday, maybe. Maybe someday when I'm 60 years old and constipated.
Anyway,
shout out to our patrons that have come in. Oh, the other thing on Patreon too, which you may have seen if you're following our podcast feed, we have After Dark, Beer Mile After Dark, and we will continue to release those episodes only to Patreon. We put maybe just the clean part, the little bit of clean part that
like
we
the
can
intro, yeah,
on the normal feed, but then there's, you know, an hour plus more of that always behind the scenes. We've already recorded the next one, and we're going to try to get even more guests for that one that are willing to spill some tea on others. So that's another benefit. But here we go. Let's start reading these. Let's alternate.
You're the name. Oh, okay.
Let's alternate. All right. You got number one.
Oh, easy. Wilson. Shout out to Wilson.
That's
immediately.
Yeah.
Wilson!
Wilson! I just see the image of the Wilson
freaking
floating
volleyball.
Away. Yeah. Joe Kelly.
Sounds like a porn star.
Just a basic name.
All right. This one's a little tough.
David Kushner.
David Kushner. Not David Kushner.
James Lewers.
Garrett Gardner.
Squits Dub.
Bread Matrix.
Kim Walter.
Brandon Boyer.
James Smith.
Daisy Lynx.
Screw it, let's just say everyone. Christopher Gomez.
Oh, I don't know how to say this one. Bashirs? Matthew Bashirs.
Jeffrey Jose Carl.
Dank.
Nice. I think there's more, but that's definitely everyone that's new since we've announced it previously. We've got the usuals. You got Marky Mark in there.
You got the boys.
You know, the people that everyone knows already. Thank you all. Patreon.com/beermile. Hit us up there. Also, thank you to Manscaped. Look, we renewed in 2022 with Manscaped.
Hell yeah.
The boys are not going to grow those bushes. We're going to keep the bonsai trees looking fresh in 2022.
I saw the leg warmers and some shit from the 70s coming back. And I was like, maybe the bush is coming back. Mm. But we renewed.
Word on the street is that the bush is coming back for some. But look, I'm long bonsai trees. I'm short bushes. Bonsai trees convert more CO2 into O2 than bushes do.
Sure.
So that's what I'm all about. So manscaped.com, Beer Mile, all one word, 20% off and free worldwide shipping. You can't beat that. No more Black Friday, no more holiday sales at Manscaped. So literally this is the best deal you can get at Manscaped. True. Is the code Beer Mile, 20% off. And also, I've been loving their body wash and their shampoo.
Oh, I was actually going to say the same
It's
thing.
Good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff. And the cologne matches the scent of the shampoo and body wash. So just everything on you just smells good.
As
just
a 25-year-old man, this is, I think, potentially the first time as an adult.
You're only 25?
Yeah. this is the first time that I have used shampoo / conditioner or body wash that is actually meant for dudes. The last 5 years, I think I've been using the L'Oreal Tresemme type shit.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's a downgrade. I would say it's an upgrade.
Yeah. I mean, L'Oreal, fucking terrible product.
Probably a lot of chemicals.
Unless you want to sponsor us, then it's the greatest product.
Yeah.
Terrible product. Lots of chemicals, lots of child labor. You don't want to buy that. Manscaped, made in the USA, organic, fair trade, vegan, plant-based, gluten-free, dairy-free, and it smells good. And it cleans you too. So if you're looking for something that cleans you, Manscaped does it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So manscaped.com, Beer Mile is the code, 20% off free shipping. Good stuff.
Man, anything else we gotta do before we
I think that's it. If you stick around to the outro, we have a beer review of the week, Bud Light Seltzer. Water review of the week, Bud Light Seltzer. So stick around for that.
I'll actually do a water review.
Water review. Let's do it. Other than that, I don't think so, you know.
And happy New Year, I guess. I guess we already had an episode pop out, but we didn't say happy. That wasn't recorded in the New Year.
That's true. This is the first episode we recorded in the New Year, so Happy New Year to all of you. I'm sticking to my New Year's resolutions this year. Live, laugh, love a little bit more than I did the year before. How about you?
I don't know. I didn't make one this year. Last year was to do more drugs, and this year, I don't know. Everything I think is pretty good in life, so it's just keep it rolling.
Yeah, man. I'm just vibing this year.
Yeah, I'm just vibing.
We're just vibing.
New
this
Year's
year.
Resolution, just vibe.
Just vibe. All right. Let's vibe with Holly Archer, the more entertaining person in this trio.
Yeah, the most. For
let's
sure.
vibe with her for the next hour, and then, see you on the other side.
We're good.
Got to make sure it's all perfect just for you. No.
Good. Yeah. It's like it's your first time, huh?
Really? I mean, kind of.
I feel like I learn something new every time I do it. So in that sense, yeah, it's pretty much a first time every time for something.
Speaking of first times and meaningful moments, we got our New Year's resolutions. Chris, have you shared yours yet?
I don't think I have.
Do you have one?
Do I have a New Year's resolution? I don't know. Prioritize myself.
Boo.
Me time.
I'm bored.
More social time with friends. Less time sitting locked into a condo and not leaving, staring at a computer screen. Yeah, I don't know. Something along those lines.
Holly, what about you?
Oh, mine's not being late. I'm dreadful for being late. I'm late all the time. I always think it's going to take me 15 minutes to like do my hair and makeup and get out of the house, and it's never happened. It's just always.
You weren't late to this podcast. You were on time.
True.
Hey, we're day six, and I'm hanging in there. I've been early for everything. So.
I'm doing good. I'm so late with everything, even with Zoom calls, especially for work. I'll always show up 5 minutes late. I'm like, hey, sorry, I was
on another Zoom call.
Honestly, I was making coffee and looking at TikTok. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I get so annoyed when somebody's late for me. So if I text someone like, can you let's meet here or for a run, and they're 20 minutes late, it drives me insane. So I was like, oh, I really need to fix that when I'm late. That. Yeah. So I'm going to be known as the early girl now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what are you going to do to actually make sure you're on time? Are you telling yourself that everything that you have scheduled is like 10 minutes earlier than what it actually is just to make sure you show up? Or like, how are you going to hold yourself accountable for this?
Yeah. So I come up with this idea that for every minute like that I'm late for somebody, I'm going to owe that minute back. So if I'm 20 minutes late, I owe them 20 minutes. So if they want a coffee and it takes 20 minutes for a coffee run, then I'm their coffee bitch. Eventually,
oh, I like that.
Eventually it will set in that you do not be late. Otherwise you're going to owe somebody, because it could add up to like 2 hours and God, there goes my time. So I think, you know, I've got to punish myself. That's the only way I can fix it.
that's really creative. I've never
kind
heard
of savage,
that.
But
yeah. No, that's a good way to do it. And I would agree with you. Like I don't mind when someone's late, but I would say especially when you're running with someone, that's when it's the worst. Cause I guess in the winter, even more so, you drove somewhere and you're like waiting at a trail or whatever
sitting
the case is
in your
and,
car.
Yeah. And you're just like waiting around. You're like, should I be doing my like pre-run warm up yet? Or like, are they going to be even more late? So yeah, you know, I couldn't be your running buddy. I think this year, until 2022.
No, that's actually what happened. Was somebody was late for me, and like I had work, I had a massage, and my whole day got screwed up, and I was running with him, and I'm so pissed. I was like completely silent. I was like, I hate you right now. I should have just ran without you. So I was like, right, I'm such a hypocrite, so I need to fix this. So
So being in the US in training right now, I guess tell us a little bit about your current training setup, who you're training with, living situation, all of that.
Yeah, you want a bit about me. So I went to the school in the US. So I went to SMU in Dallas, Texas. So I did 5 years over there and did the whole, you know, conference USA. And I was dog shit when I was in college. I wasn't very good. I don't know why that I actually got better when I graduated. I did a master's and then I went back to the UK and I started just corporate work. I still kind of work in pharmaceuticals. So, you know, the marketing, drug launch, that kind of thing. And I started training just on the side, but in the UK, I'm not sure if you're familiar, probably are from your background experience, but we have a club system that means you train after work. Usually there is a club in every town across the United Kingdom, pretty much, that has a club that you just attend, pay a yearly
dues,
fee, and 6:30, everyone just meets at the track. All types of, you know, older people, younger people, everybody. So this, you can normally slot in, fit in with somebody, get a run in at the very least. I was doing that for 3 or 4 years. And when COVID hit, actually, it helped me out because it meant that my company went remote. And I also asked to work from a different time zone, because you might as well, once you're remote, like who cares, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, it took a little bit of negotiating and they agreed to it. And then, I came out and did a couple of altitude stints and got to know everybody in Flag. So I've actually only been here since January last year. So I've only been here for 12 months, but it's been a roller coaster since I've been here. And then I went home, won the British indoor champs, then made my first GB team, then made a European team, and then got a silver medal. So I don't know. It just all happened. But then I came back this summer and kept training. Unfortunately, I missed out on the Olympics by a couple of seconds, but it happens. I mean, I bit off more than I could chew anyway, but then I got to know the team here and I feel like I've got a lot more left in me. So I've joined the Under Armour team in Flagstaff and I'm just training here pretty much, I'd say 70% of the time, 30% going home for trials, races, European scene, whatever comes. So that's a bit about me, my backstory.
That's absolutely crazy.
It's a crazy progression, especially.
When you...
It's not really a progression. It's like I kind of came out of the sport and then came back in.
Right,
so
right.
It's not typical. I don't think it's very typical that somebody can get a contract 28 or 27. It's not
to get a contract
typical thing.
And the success that you've had in like... I mean, granted, so I guess after graduation, when you said you're doing like 3 or 4 years, just... in the local club, like what was your kind of commitment to the sport from like mentality as well as like how much were you running and training.
Yeah, I mean, I've always run. I mean, I love running, and if I'm going to race, I'm like always competitive. So yeah, I mean, I never really gave up. I wouldn't say when I was training, I always had like the intention to do well. And, I hate getting in a race and getting my ass handed to me. So, yeah. I was serious about training, but did I have the intentions of getting a contract and going pro? Absolutely not. Like, it was just about making my British champs and maybe making the final and seeing how good I could get. But this year, just, yeah, you know, it's just one of them years where I massively misjudged myself. I just thought, you know, like I was done and I'm in the corporate world now. And, you know, once you get rolling, you know, who knows what can happen. So, yeah, but I wasn't doing high mileage and I was always knackered because you commute to work in a city, just so tired after work. So I think what's made me better is just not being as tired. I think it's simple as that. It's just, you have so much more time to rest and recover, and your brain isn't like in a car, traveling, in work, in meetings, traveling home. And then you get home and all you want to do is like put your feet up and watch TV and call it a day. But that mentality change when you're a pro, you can then prioritize training, and then you can still do best of both worlds, but put training first. So I would have nights where in the UK after work where I just wouldn't train and, you know, I wouldn't care about it. But I think now I don't miss a day. I'm like, nope, I'm going to get out, do it. It's my job now. So I think that kind of twist in mentality and just the recovery side helps professionals be as good as they are, I think. Yeah.
For sure. How much were you racing when you were part of the club and working full time?
I preferred racing back then, if I'm going to be honest, because it was fun. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, you go out after and, you know, you can rock up and eat a Mars bar before you race and like, you know, who cares? So I would race all the club races as well. So we had like this thing called road relays and it's like six a team. So let's say, I guess like the Ekiden that would recently happened in the fall. So it's very similar to that. So you have like four girls and six guys in your club, and then you go against all the other clubs across the country and, you know, you hand over and it's great fun and everyone does the same legs. You have the fastest leg of the day and, you know, it's like, it's more team orientated, and it's just each year you have the same clubs that battle it out. UK is like Cambridge, actually, from where I'm from, Leeds. So yeah, there's a few good hubs that always kind of come up on trumps. So yeah, no, that's, we would race that and then cross country a lot. So, you know, what you do at NCAA system, you know, carries on in the UK, which is great. So you can do nationals and, you know, keep going. So yeah, I definitely prefer racing in the UK just because I'm doing the club system because of the pressure and the fun side of it. So
yeah,
I think in the US, it's so intense. Every single race that you watch is professional and it's like about performing. But when you have the club scene, can you imagine like it's open to absolutely anybody and like you can be in the same race as the professionals? It's fun. So, yeah.
Yeah, we have a huge missed opportunity in the US not having something like that. I mean, obviously, like people can go of any ability, can go do a road race or something like that. But it's not the same. And there's not like that team atmosphere of like, we're all going to do the same races every week, you know, race against the other clubs. And yeah, we don't have any of that. It really sucks. Like all we have is,
it's such an individual sport post-grad.
It's completely individual. Yeah. And that's why most people don't do it, is because it's not as much fun to be individual. It's like training by yourself after working a long day. And then it's like getting people to line up with you for racing schedule is near impossible. Like everyone's just training for their next marathon or whatever and not doing cross country or track meets or anything like that. So
why do you think that is though? Because there is definitely room for it. Like, you know, where are you guys from?
Chicago.
We're in Chicago. Yeah. So
you
there
could
are...
like have a Chicago like running club, and then you could go against, you know, Boston running club, and then top teams go to Terre Haute and you do an NCAA cross, and then it becomes like, you know, but one thing I think would be an issue is just the size of America is massive, whereas the size of the UK we can handle.
True.
You know, we do have like a 2,000-3,000 people in a cross country rate, men just doing a 10K, which is insane to watch. But I think the size of America would be a problem, but you could have like trials and like you have NCAAs, but
right. It is crazy though, because we do have clubs, and even in Chicago there are like three, four, though. Five clubs that I can think of, but we never race each other. It's not
You don't have that rivalry.
Yeah, there's not like a regular. I don't know. I guess there's nobody putting on races. I mean, interesting. Are club races,
but there is like club nationals, which is weird.
There is the USA club national meet, which just happened in December, but outside of that there's like no other,
which makes no other opportunities. No sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
So we have really well-known like track races, we have road races for the team, we have cross-country races that are just in the calendar every year, so everyone knows to mentally prepare for them. So, and then all the coaches, you know, bit of coach rivalry, athlete rivalry, club rivalry. So I think that helps, because everyone can then plan for them. But yeah, you're right. If the US don't have it in the calendar, it's not going to happen. So yeah, everyone needs to know about it and be on board with it for it to work. But it's just because it's been happening in the UK for, you know, years that, you know, and it's really good for kids' development. So yeah,
I think if we ever get like a Netflix style documentary, have you guys watched Drive to Survive?
I have not.
Oh, okay,
it's no, like I haven't.
It's about Formula One.
You're on your own. Sorry,
it's about Formula One, and it's
Is it new? Is it new?
There's only two or three seasons, I think.
Oh, so it's the series that everyone's been talking about, basically. Okay. Yeah. I have not watched it yet. I need to.
But if there is a running version of that, I feel like it has to take place in the UK, because they're like post-grad running, just like the club scene in the US being very kind of like boring and non-existent would...
It's like marathon, isn't it? You go from college to a marathoner or nothing.
Pretty much, because that's the only thing where there is... I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. That's the only like guaranteed
there's no
big event that everyone can kind of train for. Like in my club team, everyone is just focused on the next marathon.
Yeah.
I guess maybe that's a question for you. Is that a thing in the UK? Mm-hmm. Do people prioritize the marathon? It doesn't seem like they do as much.
Well, I guess I'm the prime example. Like I wouldn't have been a pro if I was in the US, because there would have been no opportunity for me, because the club system allowed me to get back racing, go back to get onto some track races, and it to not be weird. Like if in the US I wouldn't get in the races, I wouldn't make it. But I was, because of the amount of races that we had that are available for an average runner, I could get in some races and progress. Whereas that's not really a thing in the US.
Yeah, so. You're not gonna find a community 1500 meter. People don't even know what 1500 meters is.
Nobody even knows.
but the thing is if you had that space, there's so many people in the US that I feel that like didn't go pro straight after. Maybe they got injured. Late bloomers, or you know, that's basically what happened to me. I don't know why. I had everything given to me in college, but didn't happen. You know, 4 years later, it happened.
What was was there a specific day that you woke up and you're like, I actually want to pursue this as a profession? Like how did things transpire?
No, I never ever wanted to be a professional. I never thought I was good enough, if I'm straight honest. You know, in college it was about getting a free ride and getting a good education. And then, you know, I got in the corporate world, but I kept training, and the training, it was refreshing from working. You know, you start in work is the priority, training becomes, you know, whatever happens. And then, you know, I was always a talented runner, so you know, your coach and your club coach throws you in races that don't matter. It doesn't matter where you come, how you do. So I just enjoyed it, and you know, then it went from enjoying it to making British Championship finals, and then I came fourth in 2019, and I was like, oh, hang on a minute, maybe I should, you know, do some altitude camps for fun. And COVID happened to hit. So I was like, all right, this is good. And then it snowballed. So without COVID and, you know, that, it wouldn't have happened. But again, I had all the facilities when I was 18 to 22, but it was maybe it's too early for me to develop.
Did you do altitude in college?
No. It wasn't really a thing then. Yeah. I don't know. It wasn't really... I honestly don't know what it was. I had everything. I had all the facilities. I had the training. I just I didn't run very well. I did more, probably more miles then. I don't know, maybe just some athletes develop later on and just do better. So that's why I think the UK club system is, you know, important for that, because it wouldn't, mm-hmm. it enabled people to then come out at a later stage. You know, there's a marathon guy who won the London Marathon this year in the UK, Phil Sesman. He's got the two dogs. You're probably aware of him, but you know, he's another one. He's like my age, and without the club system, like, where would he be? You know? So I met him in Europeans this year as well. He did the 3K there, and he was just, you know, starting up, and you know, that gave him the clubs, and he does all of these races as well. That's how we know each other. So yeah, the club system I think is really important for like, you know, taking that next step. But no, I never woke up and went, oh yeah, I'm going to be a pro. Like, I'm good enough. No, that was never me. I'll leave it to them.
Leave it to the pros. was going from, like, at what point did getting picked up by a contract, when did that start to become a reality?
Probably indoors this year. Yeah, like when I got a medal, I think, because, you know, being a pro isn't about running just, in my opinion, it's not about running fast. Yes, obviously, you deserve a contract if you run fast. But nowadays, being a professional is also about being, you know, in the spotlight and doing well under pressures, racing well, racing tactically, you know, being a good role model as well, and being a good advocate for a brand. It's not just, you know, you can run fast, but you can be a very, very bad advocate for the or you know, you can cause more damage than good. So, and you know, I ran slow in the final in Europeans in Poland, and I was racing girls that made the Olympic final this year in Tokyo. So it wasn't, you know, you got to know how to race as well. So yeah, I think when I raced well, I was like, hang on a minute, like if I get into championships and I get the opportunity, then I think I actually deserve to be a pro. But sometimes throughout the summer, I was like, I don't deserve to be a pro until I run standard. Like, that's my where my head's at as well. So I think you need to be fast and run the standard to deserve a contract, but you also need to be able to have that racing mindset and and be a good racer. So yeah, there's no point being quick and then bottle job in the race. So
yeah, consistency. I mean, consistency, obviously very important. And you raced a lot this spring, I guess late winter, spring. I think you ran like 12 1500 meter races in like 3 months or something, or 4 months. It was a lot. God. And then you ran a couple of 800s after that. But I guess, and also, you know, going back to even the club scene, racing frequently, which is not something we typically do in the US. So would you say that's, I mean, you mentioned earlier that you really enjoy the racing piece. Would you say that's also just a big component of your training and your strategy of just, you like to get out there and race as much as you can?
I think obviously that's something that I've done from the club scene, is like, racing isn't as intense. It doesn't matter if you have a bad day. It doesn't matter if you race 5 weeks in a row. No one cares. But as a pro, you have to pick and choose. So I think you've got to change it up. But I overdid it this summer because I was chasing the time, and that was all new for me. And I made some mistakes. You know, I ran 4:07, like, I don't know, way too many times, when in every single condition and in different tracks. And obviously I was capable of running the time, but mentally I let it get to me too much. So that's what I'm talking about with that pro kind of transition, and like why I enjoyed it more being a club runner, is you don't have that pressure. So you just race and no one's watching you, and you're not like pressurized. It's like, oh wow, you're in full-time work and you're, you know, making British champs finals. So that's obviously a lot easier than being a professional and having the expectations to be everybody else that isn't like a professional. So yeah, but going into indoors, I'm going to follow a similar strategy of racing a lot, because I'm going to go into indoors with the mindset of not caring and just racing, and trying to incorporate like just enjoying it, which is said and overrated. Like, the worst, everyone says just enjoy it, but it is the worst when you put pressure on yourself and try and give yourself these high goals and just crumble afterwards. And you're just like, why am I doing this? I don't enjoy it anymore. So I think going indoors, I just want to go to each race and just and just enjoy it and not worry too much about the outcome and just see what happens, and then try and take that outdoors, because you know, that's kind of where I faulted, I think, outdoors.
Definitely. Do you think that most pros, this is like a big debate in the sport of track and field, do you think most pros don't race enough? It would certainly be better for spectators if there were more races. Like, I don't know, Bowerman Track Club comes to mind, and I know you've witnessed Mark Scott training in the past as well.
I'm just curious
in general. Yeah. Like, do you think, like, so they're like at one extreme where they like they are really good at peaking for the world championships, yep, and stuff. So I mean, it's clearly working, but yeah, yeah, I don't know. I'd say they're on the opposite extreme of kind of what your philosophy is of, I'm going to put myself into a lot of situations, give myself a lot of chances, and one of them's going to go well or multiple will go well. I'm just going to show up and do it. So I don't know. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Wait, so what's your question?
So question one, we'll get into Mark Scott in a second.
Oh,
We'll get into Mark Scott in a second, but I'm curious.
Chris, you got to talk more shit. She's a shit talker. You got
No, do you think pros in general are not racing enough? I guess we'll ask the question that way.
Yeah, because of course they're not going to race enough because of the expectations within them. The contracts, now having seen a contract, having signed a contract, the bonuses, the reductions, everything that can go in there, the risk of injury is not worth it. It's not worth it because of the way professionals have to operate. So I don't think pros race enough, no, but also, you know, I don't think a marathoner should be racing, you know, 20 times a year. A 1500 meter, 800 meter runner can, like, it's not going to affect us the same way. So yes, I think pros can race more if the pressure is taken off of them, and that's through contracts and everybody else's perception, right? If you have more fun races, we're going to race more. But every single race, you know, you're trying to make the Olympic trials and, you know, all these world teams, you got to be picky and choosy, which makes the racing intense for them and not as fun for everybody else. So if you incorporate more like off-season races that are like just for fun, then that pros can do, then maybe that's a way around it. But I don't think pros race enough, and I don't think I will race as much now that I am a pro either, which is probably maybe a good thing and a bad thing. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Diving into the contracting pro runner piece of it even more, is it? We've talked about this with a few guests in general and how it's structured. So I know there's like bonuses, for making country teams and world championships, Olympics, all that good stuff. Obviously records, but how much of a component of a pro running contract is like the social media side of things and marketing for the brand and all of that? Like, is that a big part of your obligation to Under Armour, is, you know, being a voice of the brand and promoting it?
I mean, yeah, they do. Under Armour are a great company in that sense, because I don't personally have any reductions, which means I have no pressure on me. So if I don't run for the next 2 years, who cares? I'm still going to be able to get paid and do what I want to do.
That's great.
But they do have some sections in my contract where, you know, they do encourage financially for me to go on podcasts and so thanks guys.
Anytime, you're welcome to come back if you need to fill that. If you need to fill that contract, you're always welcome back. Just
right,
let us know.
4 years to fill. So podcasts, you know, social media stuff, like they encourage that financially within my contract, but that is not something that every brand does. That's just something that Under Armour do. And it depends on your personality. Some people aren't interested in, you know, doing that, which is fine. But yeah, I think that side of it is nice, because you can kind of go in a different angle, that's what I was talking about with a professional athlete. You have some professional athletes now, like Colleen Quigley, for example, that's changing her career from being like a very good athlete, but also now, you know, a very good advocate. Like, she's good at what she does, so she should be paid for it. Like, she
Right. You know, it's like more than just running fast. Right, right, right.
Yeah, right, because everybody's looking up to her. So what's the, if you never ever post on social media and you're a crazy, crazy good runner, you're not helping giving back to the community and giving back to the younger people in sport. So, you know, should you be, of course you should be financially rewarded if you're going to put extra work in and stuff. So yeah, no, I'm a big fan of that kind of side of things on the contract. And yeah.
Yeah, I never, it's hard to quantify. Like, so Galen Rupp being the extreme example of like no social media, but he is doing well and making Olympic teams, et cetera. Like, I wonder what the brands are thinking for, like, what's the return on investment of Galen Rupp, you know, at least showing presence on TV at the Olympics, whatever. And everyone sees him wear Nike stuff. So they're like, I'm going to buy Nike. Like that type of presence versus someone who maybe doesn't make the Olympic team, but like they're on social media every day, like still have 100,000 followers. They're still like, I feel like that person probably actually sells more product than Galen Rupp
Absolutely.
Does.
Absolutely.
Right.
But exactly. Galen Rupp's winning medals, whatever. Right. So like, and there still is that value too.
And you can't penalize somebody that's an introvert, you know, like at the end of the day, if they're a great runner, you know, and that if they don't want to, yeah, do a, you know, snap, you know, an Instagram story of them, you know, getting a coffee, whatever. It's not them. So yeah, there's that side to it as well. But you know, that's,
I think we
that's
should
a brand's decision.
I think they should be penalized. Like,
we want to know what coffee you get.
Please tell me.
You get almond milk or soy milk? Like, we want to know.
Maggie should just hire an assistant to just follow him everywhere and just take candids and just be like, this is the Galen Rupp candid Instagram.
Yep. What miles do you run? Yeah. What do you eat for dinner? What color t-shirt you wearing today? We want to know. So, I mean, People
will watch that shit. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I'm kind of the opposite where I watch like a bunch of like, I'm not really like brand loyal to a vlogger or something like that. But I'll just like watch TikToks of random shit, but people will watch every detail of your life. And I think it's really weird.
Yeah. If you're like, if you're like I am a true Colleen Quigley fan, like I'm going to watch every single one of her stories, posts,
and she was like,
videos.
Here's a video of me taking every piece of corn out of like a kernel. You'd be like, oh, I'll watch that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what?
If you're a fan of someone, you know, that's what you do.
That's weird, man.
I was wondering when you made the decision to come to altitude in the US for that first time. So this is before you're a pro, but you're having success in the club scene. Like what was the reason for like Flagstaff? Like, did you know someone there? Did you have a connection there? Like, how did you get that all organized for your initial visit?
All right,
visit?
So what do you know?
I don't know anything. I'm gonna claim come ignorance. On. I don't know anything.
Holly, we would never look up information that
we don't look up
be.
Any information about you. Okay. We're just meeting for the first time.
Yeah, obviously my ex happens to be Mark Scott. So I did go on a couple of camps with him in during COVID in 2020 in Park City. And because obviously he was my boyfriend, so it made sense for me to quarantine when it all hit with him and Bauman. But I was not allowed to train with the team. I was not allowed to run with the team. Maybe easy runs, but very strict. So, I mean, I don't really know the reasons for that. I just obliged, but I was working as well at that point. So yeah. And I mean, I wasn't that good. I hadn't done anything in particular, but I enjoyed running and, you know, he actually massively helped. I'll actually give him some credit. He used his knowledge. He does coaching on the side and, you know, he would kind of help with my training, give me a bit of insight into what they're doing. And then that's how obviously I helped take my training to that next level. Is like I kind of knew what the pros are doing and then I knew what holes I wasn't doing. Some things, you know, you can't go and do a Bauman session on your own and on a track when like, oh, well, someone's
not,
like that.
Not every pro can even do a Bauman session.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You could hear about one and you could try and go and do it, which is what I was doing. But until you get that consistency, of 6 months and those camps, right. then it will start plugging together, which is what I kind of did. So I did some camps. I kind of knew what I needed to do. And for a year, I just kept plugging away at it. And eventually things started clicking. I'm still nowhere near at the level that some of the, obviously, Bauman goals are at. But, you know, I'm a lot better than where I was than, you know, 18 months ago. So, yeah, I don't think he's the greatest guy in a lot of ways, but he was very good for my training. And when we were together, he was great. So, he helped me a lot with that transition and, you know, that's why I came out to Flagstaff in January. And then we broke up actually in January. So either I trained because of the altitude or because I was really pissed off, I went and won a European medal. I'm not sure which one.
But. Really?
So all I'm hearing so far is that COVID made your pro career and Mark Scott made your European championship first place medal.
We always had a running we always had a running joke on my high school team that was like, if you're in a relationship, you're just going to run slower.
You know, a lot of people have said that.
Friend of the podcast.
I know, I have 100%. I have 100% heard that as well. Yeah. And everyone said that in my high school. But I think that's also assuming that you're not dating someone who's faster than you and like helps push you and guide you. That's a little bit different.
When I was super out of shape in college and my now wife and I met, I think her halftime is like 120 something, which for me being like a fat piece of shit who's like really out of shape, just drinking beer, running that was
See, it motivated
hard.
You.
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, so it can work the other way too.
Yeah, but I didn't make an Olympic team. So, fair.
So I'm assuming then when you're in your training time there, you've met, like, did you meet others in the community and start having people to train with, or were you doing a lot of solo stuff? Okay.
Yeah. Oh no, I just ran with people. I didn't care. Any coach that would be happy to take me on, I was like, let me in. I need to do X, Y, and Z. I was just like, I'll do whatever. I trained with the New Balance girls. I trained with the Under Armour girls, whoever was really in town, I just jumped in with. And I like that. I'm more of a social person. I like to enjoy training. I don't like doing stuff on my own. It's boring and it's way more painful. So yeah, I just jumped in with the New Balance and Stephen Haas a lot. And he helped me out massively. And yeah, then I came back in the summer, continued, and you know, now I've got a contract and like know everybody in Flag, and it's great. Like, you know, everyone's so nice here and just trains with each other. It's not very hostile and, you know, it's not competitive, even though you'd think it would be. It's pretty nice.
That's definitely what it seems like looking at pictures on Instagram. Of course, Instagram isn't always reality, but it seems especially through Haas, because he has so many different, you know, athletes as an agent, as a coach, whatever, that there is this like community across brands of just runners who are there and able to put in work together. So that's pretty cool.
I think you
can see.
You can kind of have both, but I do like the community. Like, in what other sport would you really see? Like, I feel like it's pretty rare to see that.
To collaborate and help push your competitors, basically.
Well, like directly, like practice with them rather than compete against them.
Yeah. Right.
I think it makes it easy for me being from the UK as well, because I'm not a threat to it.
You're not taking their spots on the team. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and my goals have always been, you know, especially for this year's like Commonwealth Games and Europeans. And yes, if I can make Worlds, obviously going to aim for it, but though that isn't going to impact anybody here. So it makes it a lot easier. But yeah, I guess if I was trying to train with somebody that maybe take my spot at Europeans or Commonwealths, then it would get maybe a bit hostile, or just you don't want to know what they're doing. You don't want to sway away from it. But yeah, I guess that makes it easier.
Speaking of being from the UK, we have a few fun questions.
Okay.
All right. Do you want to fire away a first one?
Oh wait, I thought you were going to give me my cheat list.
Oh, I'm going to give you a cheat list. Yeah, we have one.
You know, I have like a 10-minute memory.
So start us off here. What is the what is the weirdest thing about the U.S. from your viewpoint coming from the U.K.?
Oh, there is a lot of weird things. Like, for example, like in the bathroom, you have like outlets. I love it. It's not weird, but we can't blow dry our hair or anything from the bathroom because it's seen as a danger hazard. So if you go to Europe, there's no plugs to like blow dry your hair or anything. But like here, who cares? Like, and also another weird thing is you're patriotic. Like, there's US flags everywhere. Like, that doesn't happen in the UK. Like, you know, I mean, we're all about like supporting teams and stuff, but we're not like, God bless the UK. So
just God bless the Queen.
Yeah. Pictures of her face, like draped in our, we don't put like our flag outside our house. Like, no. But yeah, what else is weird? There's plenty. Eggs. You guys refrigerate your eggs. That's not traditionally something that we do. So I'm like, I just noticed that the other day. It's like, that's something UK, you know, you have eggs at the end of like a farm and you just slot some money in. Maybe that's because I'm from the country. But or in the supermarket, you know, we don't typically refrigerate our eggs. What else? Are you learning new things?
Are you learning new things?
That is actually a completely new one. I wasn't aware of the egg thing. So what do you think about everything being like jumbo sized here? Like giant sodas, giant coffees. Was that weird?
I mean, that's America. And being from Texas, from SMU, like...
You got used to it there.
Yeah, I got used to it. But I do like it and expect it now when I go back to the UK. So I guess that's a con from being in the UK. Obviously, we don't get the refills and everything's way more stingy in the UK. And, you know, but no, I do love everything.
Everyone just happens to be slightly skinnier and way healthier.
Yeah.
Diabetes isn't a massive pandemic.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Pancakes are way better here, though. We do crepes. They're not as good.
Not feeling the crepes. Okay.
No, I'm a pancake. I'm an American pancake.
You're closer to like where crepes are from. So they
I know
should be
Belgium, but they're way too sugary and they don't fill you up.
Yeah.
So I'm all about pancakes. Chocolate chip pancakes with maple syrup is definitely my jam.
You gotta get. A pancake brand to sponsor you like Kodiak.
I'll try. I'll get on it.
What's your,
I got to win some more races first, I think.
you never know. Brands will do, I feel like with, it's like social media, brands
That's
do some weird ass PR stunts.
Oh yeah. Completely.
Maybe we'll do the pancake run instead of the beer mile. We'll do the pancake mile.
I would be down for that.
Yeah,
we should actually write that down.
We could definitely do that.
We should do that with like Kodiak because I'm down to slice it.
Have you done a beer mile? I know that's in the UK, typically the Chunder mile is a little bit more common than the beer mile.
Yeah, the Chunder mile. I didn't do the beer mile. I did the chocolate chip mile, and actually, I would have preferred the chocolate chip, the chocolate milk mile.
Gotcha.
So it was far.
Yeah,
worse.
That's way worse. That's way worse.
So I think a beer mile could be on the cards and I think, you know, I'd much prefer it, but my experience so far is not great. I got to,
I mean, after
2.5 laps and
after freshman year, I think your beer miling skills would be pretty good.
Yeah. Do you think you're in better beer mile shape now or freshman year of college?
Freshman year, I was peaking there. Yeah. I redshirted freshman year. So yeah, I had a lot of beer experience, so I think my tolerance was incredible. Actually, that was definitely the peak year. So I think I got some work to do.
is SMU like a big party school or no?
Oh,
I guess
God,
every college is every university is a party school, but
SMU is rich daddy, mummy, and daddy's. Kids so, go there. So yeah. Partying is on the top of the list for the curriculum. Yeah. It's like, you know, is it a good party school? Yeah, that's why I'm going. But I didn't know that before I went. So that wasn't my pull. But it was definitely a very big party school.
Did you visit there ahead of time?
I didn't. No, I just went out on a whim, 18, never been to the U.S. Like, let's go. Just
that's
see what
nuts.
Happens. Worst case, you know. Worst case scenario, you get on a plane and come home is what my mom and dad said. So, you know,
that's a good way of putting it. Right?
It's true. Yeah. Honestly. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it seems super scary and you're like, why would you commit to this thing when
you know, it's going to be 4 years of your life, whatever. But then, yeah, mm-hmm. ultimately it's like, oh, well, you can always change your mind and do something else if you're really not enjoying it. So it's not that big of a deal. But
yeah,
that,
I mean,
that is so crazy.
As runners, we're so calculated. We're so like, what if, what this, like the outcome. And I think you just got to relax a bit more and go, actually, what's the worst that can happen? Like, okay, I don't like the school, then I can go back to the UK and go to school there, or I can take a year out and then go to another school and, you know, whatever. But I'm more of the character is like, make it work. Like, who cares? Pull your socks up and, you know, I'm going to go to school. I'll make another friend. If I don't like the coach, then whatever. I just go to practice and not talk to them, you know? So I think that's more my character. So I just didn't really care. I was like, It's a good business school. It's a good place. It's a good city. Make it work. You know, it's more about your attitude. I think when people are like, oh, it didn't work here. It's not really about the place. It's about you
mindset
need to change things.
Is that
a UK phrase? Pull your socks up. Is that?
Yeah. That's my mom and dad's phrase when, you know, when I was like, oh, it's not working. Pull your socks up. Get on with it.
I like that. Yeah.
So my next question was, what is your favorite like American mannerism or phrase?
I love it when, well, my coach always used to say, I'm out of town. Like, that's like, I'm out of town. Like, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's just so American. But can I say my least favorite?
Because
that's one of my things that I have picked up from the US and I hate it.
Probably because you started making fun of it and then saying it sarcastically.
I haven't made fun of it yet until now. So this is a first. You're hearing it directly hot, fresh from the news, but it's the word like in the sentence. Like, you know, I just said it like, oh, do you like my phone? Like, it's this, like, I went here, like, and I never used to say that. I used to have my sentences correctly, you know, used with verbs and it, you know, and now I always put like in a sentence and it's not good.
As a verbal tick or asking, do you like this? Like, what else would you say there?
No, like when you're explaining something. So I've just done it there. So you're like, oh yeah, I had a track session. Like, and you know, when you do this, like, and then you get this pace.
It's just
like,
it's a filler. You just don't need it. You can just cut
it out.
It's
a filler.
Yeah.
It's an American filler. It's what you say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not a thing in the UK, though.
It's interesting that you adopted it.
Yeah.
That's weird.
It's because who you're talking to, isn't it? It's like, if somebody always uses it in their sentence, then you start doing it. And, it's something I've picked up that I'm not happy about.
Do you have an internal monologue? Like, when you read words, can you hear them in your head?
No, I just say it as it is. So,
really?
I need to start reading the dictionary or something so I can get a better.
But like, if you like read a sentence, do you read each word to yourself, or do you just like look at it and
like.
Or do you just like?
Do you like? Just see what I mean.
Do you just like?
Fuck! I hate that.
I notice myself saying that at work all the time now. And like are two. I say a lot whenever that's my filler word, and then like is the second filler word for me. So I am very aware of that, trying to improve on that. But at this point, I don't think anyone in the U.S. even hears the word like anymore. It's like it doesn't sound bad. Kind of sounds bad, but everyone says it.
You can
so
only
I think
hear
everyone's
it
okay
when
with
you
it.
Listen to your own voice back.
Right.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, I said like a lot. That was weird.
Yeah. Or if someone calls you out for it every time you say it, then you're like, whoa, I say it a lot. But when I was in the corporate world, I guess when I was doing the presentations and standing up in front of my boss, you couldn't say like, otherwise, you know, everyone would be like, huh? So I think, you know, you adopt a way of like presenting yourself in the corporate world as well. And then when you come out of it and you're with all your buddies all the time, you just relax too much. And I was like, oh wow, I sound too valley. I'm a valley. I need to get out of the valley and back in the country.
I was gonna say for internal monologue, like how you can hear yourself. God, oh fuck, I can't believe
like
that you guys
like how you can hear yourself.
I can't believe that you guys flamed me into,
and I wouldn't even have noticed. I didn't even notice that until you just pointed it out, to be honest.
It didn't
pop in my head that you just said it. But
so my internal monologue whenever I talk or potentially even like listen to movies. God, when I listen to movies that have accents or talk to people with accents, my internal monologue adopts that accent for like
an hour.
Yeah.
For like an hour.
Holly, I'm gonna end the call.
Do you see what I mean though? You can just say for an hour. Yeah.
Let's get this host off the air. Everyone can't stand to hear him anymore.
I think I'm going to buy a dog collar and just click the button every time I say the word like.
Yeah. Get an electric shock. That's just something that in the US I've definitely adopted with the vocabulary that I'm not as happy about. So, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was in Lee, England in October. Yep. And the main thing I picked up there is saying that something is cracking. Like it's fun. Oh. It's cool. I don't think we really say that here, but everyone there was,
it's a cracking.
I was just about to say everyone there was like, yeah, come to this bar, it's cracking, or this race is going to be cracking, whatever. And now I picked up on that, but I don't mind that. I think that's kind of cool. That's unique. That's a fun one. That's something that not everyone else in the US says. So it's my little slang word.
I have to be careful because if I said that here, like let's crack on with something, or, you know, people be like, huh? What do you mean crack on? You know, but that's something that everyone says, like it's a cracking morning, or, you know, let's crack on with this rep. And people will be like, but yeah, you just don't end up saying it because people don't understand. So you end up adopting to your surroundings and saying totally and awesome. So that's what I say. Now. It's an awesome morning instead of a cracking morning.
What do you think is worse? An American doing a British accent or a Brit doing an American accent?
Hey, let's test it. Let's hear your British
and you can hear my American.
Wait, is that American or British?
Is that American or British?
I didn't even notice any.
I'm just saying what she's saying.
But is that's you're just saying that's an American accent. That's not give us something.
Give me something to say.
I don't know. London was cracking for New Year's or something.
London was cracking for New Year's.
Not bad. That was pretty good. Yeah.
Let's hear an American.
Oh my gosh, London was cracking for New Year's. I had so much fun.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I think you've had more practice than I have. That was really good.
That was good.
I think I've got like the valley hype though. Maybe I've been around too many Californians.
I would say that's probably the worst. Would that be called the dialect or accent?
Yeah. Dialect within. Yeah.
Midwest is pretty bad.
What was the drinking game of choice in Texas?
Ooh.
I need to know. Oh. I've never gone to a party in Texas, so I want to know what the college drinking game of choice was.
You got your traditional beer pong, obviously American. We played a lot of card games, so King's Cup, you know, like the Dirty Pint. I don't know if that's American or British, and I brought it over, but the track team would, you know, the Dirty Pint drinks the last one before we go out and hit the Uber. But when we'd go to a party, it would usually just be the social disgusting beer pong, but I think it's gross. Like that beer, that ball goes everywhere and like you're like, let's drink
under the couch, behind the whatever.
So they didn't even use water cups there. That is pretty savage.
Just straight beer. Oh yeah. Yes, usually the clean way to play it is you fill the actual,
it's meant to dump it in a bit of water in the back. When you're pissed, that doesn't happen, doesn't matter, does it? You're like, wah! there's no half measures. But no, usually just some card games. A couple of times when we were getting ready, I don't know, this is just what I did with the girls getting ready, but we'd listen to songs. So if there was a key word in a song, like every time a singer said the word love or something, it's like, whoa, let's do a shot or something. So
that's similar
we did that a couple of times.
I like that.
That's similar to Thunderstruck.
Yeah, right, Thunderstruck's very. Have you ever heard of that AC/DC Thunderstruck? That's similar to that, where you take a take a drink every time
they say thunder.
Thunder, yeah, yeah. Every time they say thunder.
But we also did.
You have like you get drinking games to episodes like the Bake Off, or you know, you have that now, don't you? So I guess it was a play on that, from, you know, while you're getting ready. Songs are wrong, so.
Are you surprised that Americans are so enthralled by the Great British Baking Show?
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. It's just them
talking, I think.
Yeah, I think it is. It's the vocabulary that we use, like the sponge and the rise in the bake.
It adds a lot more color to the kitchen, I think.
It does. It's way more entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think like the puns and the funny side to it is you have to get that British humor, which doesn't exist in America, because I think America is a little bit too serious with that kind of stuff. So I think the Americans tried to make a Bake Off, and I heard it was an absolute disaster, because
I think there is a season or two. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't make the stint. But yeah, no, the Bake Off's pretty big, not just because, you know, what they do is funny, but it's just the way they present it as well. I think that's what makes 100%. It is, you know, average people cooking and it being a triumph or a disaster, and seeing it all unfold and making fun of it. And I think that's, I actually don't know what the big deal about it is, but it's pretty cool.
it probably all started with like Gordon Ramsay. What are you?
Yes.
I'm an idiot sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah.
God.
Yeah. Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
What, so you said, one word that pissed. What are some other British words for being drunk?
Rat-assed. Yeah, he was absolutely rat-assed. So you say ass, but we say arse. So like, oh my God, he was absolutely rat-assed. Pissed, obliterated, hammered. We say hammered a lot. That's a very traditional one. Like, oh, she was absolutely hammered. Yeah, that was actually the most drunk I've ever been was here in Flagstaff for my birthday in November. I think it was because of the altitude.
Yes.
And I was like, I got this, you know, I'm a Brit. I can handle my liquor. And I got so drunk, I didn't have dinner, and there was everybody around. And I remember Emily Durgan was next to me, and she was like, yeah, you didn't eat any dinner. And I was like, wait, we had dinner?
I could just picture Emily being like, really like smiling and concerned. Like, so Holly, you didn't have any dinner.
Yeah, it was the first time I met so many people. So like Nikki Hiltz was there with her girlfriend, and everybody was there. And I was just, oh my God, I was upside down most of the night. So, the good news was I was in bed by 10:30, and, you know, I was up and running at 8 a.m. the next day. I was absolutely fine, but I did throw up in the car and forget half the night. So,
note to
self. And the
worst
thing is I think I only had 4 drinks. I'm pretty sure.
The altitude does make a difference.
I mixed wine and cocktails as well. And well, to my memory, it was 4 drinks, but who knows?
Okay. So yeah, strong drinks, mixing drinks, and then also no dinner basically like doubles the drinks too. Like that makes 4 as actually like 8 in that situation.
And being a petite runner and doing a workout that morning might have been a problem, but
to self, dude. Go to Holly's birthday party next year.
For real.
Wild.
Give us your invite. So who else was at this party? Like, is this a thing where everyone in Flagstaff gets together?
People in Flagstaff like beer.
Well, they definitely enjoy
running and drinking.
Enjoy a good time. Like, is this a thing where everyone gets together for people's birthdays and it's probably time of year dependent too, but
it was one of them things where I didn't think anybody would come, because I'm like, oh, I'm new here and no one likes me, whatever. So we just like invited everybody. So who was there? A lot of Brits were there. Carl Langford, it was the same day. Molly and Eric were up doing the New York Marathon, so they didn't come. But Danny, Emily and her boyfriend, Taryn, Nikki Hill, couple of the Dark Sky Distance, all of those came, and just there was about 15 of us, and we only had a table for 10, so like the whole restaurant was like furious, and you know, the bill was a problem. It was I was in the kitchen at one point because I got lost in the bathroom. I was like, where's the loo? And I was in with the chef, so it was just one of those nights.
Those nights.
But there you go. That's what life's about. It's about, you know, making a tit of yourself sometimes. So
it is. I think we in the US
Americans,
it's so weird,
do take themselves,
we take
a lot
ourselves too
seriously,
but at the same time we have no right to, because we Americans do stupid shit, and we also like get wasted, whatever. But then we still like at the same time pretend like we take ourselves really seriously. Like we're not willing to make fun of ourselves for anything.
Blackout drunk and then show up to work the next day acting like you didn't get blackout drunk yesterday.
Like, I don't know. It's weird. It's like you live separate lives sometimes. I don't even know how to describe it. But I would say Americans take themselves away. Even in like
maybe it boils
running
down.
Life in general. You like take yourself seriously, but then behind the scenes you try not to take yourself seriously. I don't know. It's a weird weird culture.
Maybe it boils down to Brits are just honest about their alcoholism, and then Americans are kind of closeted.
We don't sugarcoat it, I guess. It is what it is, you know? It's like I'm an idiot sometimes. I mean, it's a personal thing. I don't think that's a cultural thing, but
fair. One other thing that I wanted to ask you
I got a run in a minute, like literally got a run. So.
Okay. Wait, let me pick the last best question then. Okay. All right. Here. How about this one? All right. Is it going to be harder? I guess you could say this year. Let's say next World Championship team. Is it harder to make the US or the UK 1500 meter team?
Girls or boys?
Girls.
Right now, I think women and men, it's clear cut. Like it's so hard either way, because the depth in America, yes, is way stronger. Agreed. But the quality at the top, on the top 3-4, is equivalent. Laura Muir, Gemma Reekie, Alex Bell, Keely Hodgkinson, they're all brilliant 8-15 girls. And in terms of, but then the back end, obviously America, you're 5-8 stronger than our 5-8. But I think the top three, both sides are just as strong. But I wouldn't want to be representing the USA. No, I think, I don't know. I don't think maybe I'm more likely to have a chance in the UK if someone's injured or has an off day, then that backstop is available. So if one goal is out, then I've got that chance. But in the US, there's so many people that have that chance. So your injury, or if someone's ill, like, or sick on the day of the race, there's so many girls that could be the filler in the US, but you have that, ooh, that's my opportunity. So,
You could run the same race 10 times and it would play out differently each time. So, awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. Next time you need to fill another podcast quota, hit us up, because we could talk to you all day.
Hopefully it's cumulative.
Yeah. Hopefully it's soon. Yeah. Hopefully we can follow up this conversation, and enjoy the run. We're looking forward to seeing you race again next. And
I'm looking forward to following along with you guys, but thanks for having me on, and we'll catch up again, and maybe a birthday night, you should just come along.
Anytime. A trip to Flagstaff is easy. A trip to England is easy. You know, I love both the places, so it's, you know, anytime.
Are you planning on traveling anywhere, to go into any races this year, like indoors, outdoors?
Hopefully yes. No concrete plans yet, so keep us posted on your race schedule as well, and we gotta figure out what the hot meets are, and we'll definitely make a couple trips.
I'll be definitely doing probably like Mill Rose and the Boston one. So that's a big hot spot. But I look forward to seeing you guys. But thank you for having me on.
Of course. Enjoy your run.
Yeah, I will.
Sounds great. Awesome. Have a cracking run.
I'll have a cracking run.
All right.
That'd be awesome.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
Thanks for coming on.
Have to get it in.
Yes, I love it.
All right.
All right, ta-da. Cheers. Bye.
Thanks, Holiday.
Bye.
Man, this water is really good.
Holly, great chatting with you. I hope that we weren't solely a quota fulfillment for your Under Armour contract.
Oh, that would make me a little sad.
That would make me sad too, because we could be friends.
That did, I mean, that did pad our numbers though, or like our, that would certainly pad your opinion of being on somebody's show, right? Like you'd be like, oh, they were kind of boring, but I made a couple grand.
Yeah, fair, fair. But like,
I guess they were okay.
Yeah, well.
So hopefully she thinks that we're really cool, because then that just means that we're.
I mean, objectively, we're pretty cool. So I don't think you can argue that. It's objective at that point. But thank you, Holly, for coming on. We'll have to do a follow up. Next time we're in Flagstaff, in person would be the ideal. We should just have a round table in Flagstaff all the people that we know there now.
Because we always have like stupid ideas of like, oh, we should go do this thing at this place. But yeah. I think of those, the most possible or probable one is going to be us going to Flagstaff.
It's the hot spot. I mean, it's either there or...
Yeah, I mean, Flagstaff fucks. It's a good
there
place.
There or, I guess, Boulder or Portland would probably be the three. And yeah. I would say not Boulder. Just based on like sheer number of people that we know in a place, it'd be Flagstaff first, Portland second, Boulder third, probably.
I also like vacation in Boulder already, so like.
Yeah, I mean, also Portland, Boulder.
Yeah,
Flagstaff, let's do it. Bud Light Seltzer is the unofficial
sponsor of this podcast.
Water of this episode. The official sponsor is Manscaped. Beer Mile is the code for 20% off free shipping. Feel confident, smell good, have more amazing sexual endeavors with yourself or with others, manscaped.com. Bud Light Seltzer, unofficial sponsor. We're doing a review on this. So this is cherry cordial, specifically like a Christmas edition, I guess. It's seltzer season, apparently. I wouldn't call it seltzer season. Ooh. I call it, seltzer season's like the summer, right? So
I think I'm officially done with seltzers.
I would definitely, we have a couple White Claws in our fridge. I'm not going to ever touch those, but this is a little different. This to me is like the truly, the black labeled Trulies that are lemonade-y that are actually good.
I don't like those ones. I know Jordan does.
But if you're in the right mood.
Yeah.
You have to be in the mood for something overly sweet, this is way sweeter than a White Claw.
Maybe if I'm in a pool and it's really hot out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When they say seltzer season, they're just trying to convince you that it's a seltzer. It's not seltzer
season. They're gaslighting you.
Yeah. No, it's stout porter IPA season. It's not seltzer season. But yeah. Anywho, taste 9. Very good.
Wow.
Very good. I can't think of actually, honestly, I can't think of any seltzer that's better than this.
Damn, I feel
better
like
than Truly and White Claw.
I feel like we're in 2019.
Better than Truly and White Claw. Yeah, yikes. I'm also like a big fan of the fake cherry flavor. So yeah. Fake cherry.
Oh, do you like the drinks made with pomegranate juice that tickle your fancy at all? No.
I don't mind pomegrante juice.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I
got like a cherry that, like, type of taste.
That's a little kinda, different.
Kind of tart.
I mean, a little different. But drinkability 10, it's water. And X Factor, I'm going to give it a 0 on X Factor because it is SCN. Not seltzer season and SZN. I mean, come on, it's not fake news. It's not seltzer season. It's not SZN period season.
What do you think is
Why
the
do they
next
have periods after that?
I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense.
What do you think the next type of booze?
I was actually thinking about this because so it was like the hard root beer, right? Yeah. Like not your father's root beer was here, completely dead.
Yeah,
because everyone was like, too much sugar, can't have that.
Yeah.
You know, Mike's Hard was a thing. You know, can't have that. Too much sugar. Obviously, they still exist, but
Mike's
they're not
Hard
big.
Is
they're
what
not,
you.
That's they're not what like you, end shelf anymore, though.
Yeah, Mike's Hard is what you get. Like if you're babysitting, that's what you give the kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it's a sleeping. You know, it's like NyQuil.
Yeah,
basically the same thing. So then seltzers became a thing, and they're still like the big... Oh, also, okay, so before the root beer was the ciders.
Yeah.
Like the hard ciders.
Apple Orchard. Angry Orchards.
Reds. Yeah, and then Angry Orchard.
And then Four Loko is after that.
No, Four Loko was before the ciders.
Really?
I feel like it was... So Four Loko with caffeine was before the ciders. It was Four Loko.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So now we're up to seltzers, and it's like, yeah, now everyone has a seltzer. Is it saturated? Is it going to die? What's next?
What's the next one?
But be? Can you do... Can I mean, the reason the seltzer did so well is because it's... There's the only calories are from the alcohol. So can you do better on calories? No. Can you do better on sugar? No. Can you do better on taste? Probably not really. Like, so what would it be?
I think they should start making cans of champagne.
But then that's too, like, too carbonated, too sugary.
Well, if it's carbonated, you'll drink less.
I mean, but that's not what they want. That's ideal for the human, but that's not what the brand wants. I wonder what's next. Hmm. What is next? Actually, so here's my
listeners
take.
Reply. Put in your review what you think the next
so
best beer.
If you're on Spotify, Spotify now has polls and open-ended questions within. And we'll thank you to everyone who's responded on the previous ones. I've been testing it. We're in the beta. You know, no big deal. We're in the beta.
We are betas.
Agreed. True. Betas. I'm going to put in there right now. Scroll. If you're on the mobile app, you just like flick up like this.
With two fingers.
The video. And then it'll say what the question is. You enter it and then I will pin it and then everyone can see your answer. So the question is, what's next? So here's what I think. I think it's alcohol that's not in liquid form because the volume is an issue. Oh, I think it's alcoholic gum, alcoholic powder.
See, I've had the dried alcohol on pretzels.
Oh, really? Where'd you have this at?
I think one of Jordan's friends sent it in the mail. And like,
weird.
Did
you taste it?
No, it just like didn't taste good. It would be different if you had maybe like a beer or two before, but I just had it
so
sober
it didn't taste great.
And I like didn't get buzzed. And
see, that was like, gonna be my other question. It's like, how many pretzels do you have to eat?
I feel like you have
to
eat a lot,
and that defeats the point.
Yeah,
it's like, why not just take a shot and then eat a pretzel?
Yeah.
You know?
If there's a pretzel, I'm a have it.
Yeah, but then like, why ruin the flavor of the pretzel with the alcohol that's not going to get you drunk? When
you're
you can just take
worst,
a shot and then chase it
the
with
worst
the
of both worlds.
Yeah, it's the worst of both worlds. So doesn't make
best,
any sense,
dude. Best chaser, underrated is pulled pork.
Pulled pork, like wait, chaser?
Yeah.
Where did you have a pulled pork chaser?
4th of July, man.
It's like January.
Oh, no. 4th of July, like 6 years ago.
As a chaser? What?
Dude, you're laughing at me.
Wait, but
we didn't
start drinking until we were 21. So when you were 19, you had a pulled pork chaser?
I'm 20. I'm 25 going on 27. So close enough. No, you're laughing. But I think... So yeah, I had pulled pork as a chaser to some Jell-O shots, some real shots. And it hit different. Like 4th of July, nothing like that. Barbecue sauce.
Nothing like some Jeff's pizza.
Mark, some... fucking... Iowa people and their Jeff's pizza.
Love our Jeff's pizza. That's right.
Same as...
Sometimes you can go to Jeff's pizza at 2 a.m. and someone was so drunk that they bought pizza. Or they either buy you pizza or they bought like three slices and they only took a bite and left them on the table so you can just take their slices. Yeah.
Jeff's pizza wasn't COVID safe.
It was not COVID safe, but it was free pizza slice safe. So, you know, trade-offs. Life is about trade-offs. You give and take.
What's the other... Midwest gas station that makes pizza?
Come and go.
Casey's. Dude, fuck Casey's pizza.
It's not good. No.
I hate
They charge
like
$10
pizza.
Per pizza. Like, oh, it's premium. It's like, no, no.
Give me the
Domino's $5 pizza.
When I worked in Kansas, they wouldn't shut up about Casey's pizza. And I was like, you know, I'm like, I have access to Chicago pizza, right?
Yeah. And literally any fast food chain pizza is better than Casey's. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Where are we going with this?
Dude, we're just shitting on Casey's.
Shitting on Casey's.
Name of this podcast.
Shorting the Casey's stock, even though it's been a great stock over the last
Holly
like,
Archer
years.
And fuck Casey's.
Fuck Casey's. But see, Holly Archer is in favor of Casey's because Casey's, like every other gas station, has the big ass sodas, the big ass coffees.
True.
The big ass teas,
well,
probably.
The petrol stations.
Yeah, the petrols. Yep.
Yeah. Man, anything, what do we got to close out?
Let me think if I have some words of wisdom. I feel like I put some words of wisdom somewhere.
I saved a TikTok, but it's on my phone and we're recording. But there's one.
Oh, here, I got a words of wisdom. Okay.
Oh,
you,
fuck.
No, you go first. You go first.
So mine was something along the lines of, if you don't want to look at the price tag, then you can't look at the clock, or something like that. If you don't want to look at the price tag when you're shopping, then you don't want to look at the clock when you're working. Because you have to love your job. And like,
do you have to love your job? I mean, sometimes work is work, right?
Yeah, but I feel like in order to make a lot of money, you have to like not care about your time as much.
I need to think about this one some more.
Maybe that was too deep. Maybe my water affected that answer.
Yeah, I think your water was laced.
My water was laced with THC.
A little too much.
What's your TikTok?
So my TikTok.
Yeah, I said TikTok, and your light bulb went on.
No. I scrolled down, and I saw it.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
So I had put a words of wisdom like 3 episodes ago that I hadn't said yet. And I just remembered it. So
this has been baking.
Okay. And so here is my advice. So if I were to give advice to someone who is entering the dating world that is maybe a little price conscious, you know, like say in the traditional sense, the guy has to pay for the dinners, the dates.
Bigger question, we'll probably do in an After Dark episode, is should he? I don't know.
But in the traditional sense.
Sure.
So what advice would you give to that guy?
If he's buying something?
Yeah, in general.
If he's buying dinner for a date?
Yeah, what would you give it to that guy? What advice?
I don't know.
Okay, so here's what I'd give him.
Oh, all right, okay.
So I would tell him to make sure that he only matches with people on Tinder or Hinge that are unvaxxed, because they can't get into the restaurants. So you don't have to buy them meals. You just have to order takeout, and it's cheaper. Get yourself an unvaxxed girls, vaxxed guys. Let's go.
Hilarious. I thought you were taking it in a direction, and now it's not the direction, but it was pretty good.
What was the direction?
I thought you were going to be like, if you're taking a girl out for dinner, make sure it's worth it, if you know what I mean, or something like that.
Oh, no, not that low.
Yeah.
No.
Still kind of degenerate, but...
Guys, get yourself an unvaxxed girl or an unvaxxed guy, because you can't take them out to dinner. You can't take them to the movies. You can't take them bowling. Can't do any of those things anymore.
Do you want a Patreon only joke?
Yeah, let's do it. All right. Cut here. Cheers, everyone who's not on Patreon. Patreon.com/beermile. Peace.